it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Good morning and welcome everybody to the Lakers Lowdown Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin of Lakers Daily, here to talk to you today about, well, we got some injury updates as the Lakers and Nuggets prepare for Game 5, including one huge one that is going to be worth monitoring all the way up until game time, so we'll talk about that. And also, right, as a kind of back half of that conversation or a back half of that subject, we'll also cover, you know, some pick up from where Raj and I talked yesterday about, you know, not taking care of business when you absolutely could. The Minnesota Timberwolves did take care of business, so we're going to talk about that and how they now get to rest while the Nuggets try to close out their series against the Lakers. And also the team that they just beat, the Suns, yet another three max type team that is now going home early. And I want to talk a little bit about why I would prefer the Lakers not pursue a third max contract type player this summer. And then finally, it is a Sunday / Monday episode, which means we will be doing we'll be diving into the mailbag. As a reminder, please do send those 5-star reviews to iTunes, and I will answer any question that I get in the form of a 5-star review there. I also asked for questions on Twitter, and obviously, if you are watching live right now on YouTube or Twitter, you can send in your questions there as well, and I will get to those over the course of the show or on the back half of the show. So those of you who are watching live right now, please do hit that subscribe button on YouTube. Show has been... I think we just crossed 3,000 subscribers or something like that this weekend. Let's keep that baby rolling, and you know, either enjoy the rest of this postseason together, and or get ready for the fascinating offseason ahead. And then if you guys are watching on Twitter, head on over to youtube.com/@LakersLounge and hit the subscribe button there. And if you guys are listening to this in the morning in pod form, go ahead and subscribe to the pod wherever you get it, preferably on from Odyssey, but wherever. I don't care. Just listen wherever you can, and also tell your friends. Tell whoever you bump into today. You're at the office. There's some rando that you can't quite figure what to say beyond how's it going in the morning. Hey, you a Laker fan? Oh, yeah, me too. Awesome. Listen to the Lakers Lounge. Let's go ahead and dive in. So the Lakers and Nuggets are mere hours from their game five. And it's an interesting game five. I obviously, and Vegas agrees, obviously the Lakers are heavy underdogs going into Denver. And yet, you know, if they start the game quickly as they have all series, and those Denver Nuggets fans start to get a little nervous about the fact that, holy crap, they can't lose this game, and hope to really feel all that confident going into the rest of the series. This gets really interesting. And then what makes it even more interesting, on the Lakers half of things, according to the injury report, Cam Reddish is out, but Jared Vanderbilt was lifted, was raised to questionable, upgraded to questionable. And Christian Wood is now off of the injury report altogether. On the Nuggets side of things, Jamal Murray is now considered questionable with a left calf strain. Those calf strains are really tricky, right? Remember, Kevin Durant, before he blew his Achilles, again, to be absolutely clear, not asking or hoping for this in any way whatsoever. I legitimately hope that Jamal Murray can play through this and play through it without having to worry about further concern here. But Kevin Durant, in the playoffs, had a calf strain, played through it, and tore his Achilles in that very same series, right? The calf strain is a very tricky muscle because it's involved in such fast twitch stuff. Like I said in the last conversation that I had with Raj on Saturday night, to the north you have the knee, and to the south you have the ankle slash Achilles. That is not a region of the body that you want to take lightly here. And also, Jamal Murray, almost like the reason he hasn't made an all-star team in his career to this point is because of the injury issues with him, right? And obviously, incredible player when he's healthy, incredible player when he is fully engaged, as he tends to be, or is, as he always is in the postseason. This has been a quieter series for by Murray's standards in the playoffs, but this is not an injury that the Nuggets and he have to be really careful with. And again, had the Nuggets, and I saw, it was funny because I had Nuggets fans like really kind of angry at me for tweeting, "Hey, I think you might regret playing extra playoff games when you didn't necessarily have to." And like their response to it was like, "Oh, well, they did it last year too." It's like, that's not a response. Like, that's not a counterpoint. It means that they have now apparently made a habit of kind of taking those games lightly. I didn't think they were playing with a ton of effort and energy. They gave up 70 points in the paint in game four. That was the Lakers played well, and the Lakers deserve credit for playing well in that spot. But I thought the Nuggets kind of played with their food there. And now, instead of getting ready to rest up while Minnesota's series is now also over, they have to play this game five, hope that Jamal Murray's calf doesn't get worse in that game five, hope you have to win game five and not have to go back to LA and have Murray play another extra game in this series. And then if you lose game five, you go back to LA, and the Lakers now have all the momentum that they've ever had or that they've had against you in a while. They could take care of business in game six, and now you have a one-game sample size to continue this dynastic run that they're hoping for. And again, you're playing against a Lakers team now that's playing with house money. They won the one game. They have belief now that they can beat you. And now they could potentially get Jared Vanderbilt back here. I don't know. Like, Christian Wood technically returned in the last game, in game four. He was available to play there, but got a DNP CD.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
If Vanderbilt is available, I don't think he would get thrown into the mix there because the rotation there is tricky. But look, you haven't gotten anything from Spencer Dinwiddie anyway. I'd give him those minutes. I'd give Vanderbilt those minutes and just see how well he does there. You need some physicality against Aaron Gordon. It'd be nice to have a little extra size out there. And, you know, considering 14 or so of those minutes are going to Spencer Dinwiddie, who hasn't done anything in this series. So if Vanderbilt is available, I don't think he'd play, but I think now that I've kind of talked about it out loud a little bit, I think I would probably give him a shot. You know, what's the worst that can happen? You aren't getting anything from Spencer Dinwiddie. He can't be much worse, you know, so you may as well go out there and play somebody with a little bit of extra size and physicality and see if Vanderbilt can either limit possessions from Denver's perspective or get you a couple extra possessions of your own over the course of a game that, yeah, the longer it goes and as it remains close, those nerves are going to start kicking up for Denver, and they're going to start feeling it from that Denver fan base. And, you know, shit can happen, man. Once you allow a playoff series to go longer than it needs to, you open yourself up for shit to possibly happen. And, you know, all the credit in the world to Minnesota for taking care of business in Phoenix and ending that Suns season the way that they did, and not now having to worry about shit happening in game 5 or game 6 or whatever. Now Denver has to worry about that. And they're playing against a team now that has more belief than ever or recently to that they can win. Stuff could potentially happen there. Speaking of those Phoenix Suns, obviously they quote-unquote, you know, won the offseason this last summer, right? They traded for Kevin Durant. They traded for Bradley Beal and, you know, made some, you know, some I thought good signings on the margins, right? Problem was there was so much overlap with all of the, you know, the players who were considered good signings. And, you know, that's, you have to take fit and culture into account in today's NBA. You have to. And, you know, I thought Phoenix threw together a 2K roster. Right. You have Devin Booker, you have Bradley Beal, you have Kevin Durant, three ISO scorers, three bucket getters, who at any moment you think could just take over a game on their own. But the problem is, whether it's because of Frank Vogel's coaching or because of, like, a lot of times superstars don't like setting screens. And you know, for whatever reason, we are now 2 years into, or a year and some change into the Devin Booker, Kevin Durant working relationship. And I don't think I have ever seen those two guys run a pick and roll together. And that's insane to me, right? I mean, I know that Kevin Durant isn't your typical screen setter. He's a skinnier guy, right? He's not exactly a role threat. He's not exactly the best facilitator either. But if you put those two people... As talented offensively as they are in a set, you would think that something could come out of it, and to like not try it at all again is either unmitigated disaster by Frank Vogel, but it's hard to really hold it against Frank Vogel, seeing as we didn't see it from Monty Williams' team either. Now, Monty Williams, we found out this last year, not exactly the best head coach in the world either. Given, you know, what kind of a disaster he watched over in Detroit, but it's just crazy to me that Durant and Booker have now played well over a season together, and I have never seen them run a set that involves the both of them at the same time. That is just such a huge missed opportunity. And, you know, the Suns found a little bit of success over the course of the year running Beal at point guard. But again, like, Beal isn't a point guard. He can facilitate, but he doesn't think the game the way that a point guard does. We know the point guards are important. And even if it isn't like, I tend to think when you have a ball dominant wing, or in Phoenix's case, a couple of them in Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, that the type of point guard that you need is like an Alex Caruso type who thinks the game like a point guard, understands, hey, so-and-so hasn't got a touch here and there, and is also willing to do the small things. But the Suns, you know, they traded away Chris Paul. They traded away Campaign, or lost Campaign, I think, to free agency. Just didn't bring him back. And you know, you look across that roster, and you had Eric Gordon playing some point guard here and there. And again, like air quotes on point guard there, because Eric Gordon doesn't think the game through the way that the point guard does. They just didn't employ a point guard on that team. And I think that really hurt them. And, you know, you combine all of these things and, you know, they trade DeAndre Ayton. They bring in Nurkic, right? And Nurkic was a okay fit in some spots, but obviously a very limited player, especially defensively. And I think eventually that kind of hurt Phoenix on that end as well. And, you know, the amount of cap that your three main guys take up there, with Bradley Beal making upwards of $60 million. I think Kevin Durant makes about 50. Devin Booker makes in that same range as well. That's like the vast majority of your cap. And if you're going to give up, like if you're going to have that much of your cap allotted towards those three guys, one of them has to be willing to do the small things that help teams win. But that's not how any of those three guys are wired. And, you know, to kind of bring this to where the Lakers sit currently, and as they get ready to potentially head into their offseason as soon potentially as tomorrow night, a big subject of conversation this offseason is going to be whether or not they pursue a third star. And the types of stars that we have heard to this point are Donovan Mitchell and Trae Young. Neither of those two guys do the small things. They're both small, but they don't do the small things that help you win basketball games. They don't get after it defensively. They don't dive for loose balls. I don't know why I sounded Irish. They don't dive. They don't do those things. They are just, that's not how they're wired. They are bucket getters. They are ball dominant point guards whose first and second intentions are to score the basketball. And if you're gonna, like, the reason the three-star model is now dead is because, and this is for everybody. And I got some pushback there that like other teams have three-star. No, like the three-star model that I'm talking about here is three supermax contract type players, right? Three of them. Denver has three really, really, really good players. They have Jokic, who's the best player in the world. They have Aaron Gordon, who's for my money, one of the best players at what he does in the league. And you have Jamal Murray, who, you know, in the playoffs is a star, but isn't paid in the regular season like a star because he hasn't done the type of things that you need to do to get a supermax contract. If the Lakers go out and trade for Trae Young, you have LeBron's $60-ish million that are going to be on the books there. You're going to have Anthony Davis's $50+ million that are going to be on the books there. And then you're going to have Trae Young at the number that you're going to have him on at there. Same goes for Donovan Mitchell. And between those three players, you don't have somebody. You have AD, who comes closest, I think, to doing the small things. And I think that makes it so that the Lakers, I guess, quote unquote, big three in that case, has a better chance at working than the Suns' big three did this year. I don't think, like, if you have that group together and they're healthy in the playoffs, I don't think that trio gets swept out of them. But like, I don't know. For me personally, in this new CBA, given how much it penalizes teams for going above the second apron, and the way that like teams literally can't do certain roster building things, can't use certain roster building tools because they go over the second apron. And I don't know. For me, like that kind of scares me away from having so much of your cap allotted to three players. And then you have to, like, you basically have to hope that your veteran minimum signings, like you hit on more than half of those. You have to draft really well, which the Lakers didn't do last year. So you're going into next year and hoping that Jalen Hood-Schifino. And again, if you trade for a point guard who makes max money and are somehow able to hold on to one of Reeves or D'Angelo Russell, then there again remains a giant roadblock between Jalen Hood-Schifino and any kind of playing time. And my guess is that Fino would wind up being in that kind of a trade, but not as a real asset. Like, he didn't do anything in the NBA this year. So it would just be like, as a please consider him an asset kind of a deal. And most teams won't, if you're actually negotiating against them. I would prefer that the Lakers, you know, if you're going to make an upgrade, they need an upgrade, right? The big mistake that they made this last summer is that you made it to the Western Conference Finals and you thought that you did something, but you didn't, right? You got to the Western Conference Finals and then you got swept, and then you treated the offseason as like a victory lap for merely making the Western Conference Finals. The nice thing is here, if the Lakers lose in the first round, is that you like that kind of fool's gold sheen is gone from that concept of just running back a team that got swept out of the Western Conference Finals. And again, you could find, you're here on YouTube. I'm sure there are some shows from last summer that are on here still, where I said, I don't like the idea that the Lakers are going to hard cap themselves for Taurean Prince and Gabe Vincent, and they're going to let Beasley's expiring walk, and they're going to let Bamba's expiring walk. And those would be two potential trade chips that they could have used at the deadline, in a deadline in, you know, that like teams were demanding expiring money they just chose to let those things expire, those assets expire. And, you know, they did so for the sake of running back last year's team. And I didn't like that approach. And in this upcoming offseason, you're going to be basically not hard capping yourself, but you're like basically really limiting what your team is going to be able to consist of. If you do basically turn, like, Austin Reeves is only making $12 million. So if he's the centerpiece of a trade that, or a demand that the other team is going to make there, you're still going to have to throw in another like $30 million to be able to match it, which means that, like, and you know, maybe D'Lo opts in. Brian Windhorst seems to think that isn't going to be how this plays out, or that plays out. But you, like, if it's Reeves, you probably have to throw in Rui, then you probably have to throw in maybe Vanderbilt too. And now all of a sudden you've traded three rotation players for a guy who doesn't do the small things, you know, Vanderbilt being one of those small things type players. And where are you going to get those small things from? You're going to hope that a veteran minimum player who is trying to fight and scratch and claw to make it to remain in the league is going to do those little things. It's not how that typically goes either. Remember when the Lakers had Russell Westbrook and they basically brought in a whole bunch of minimum guys and all any of them wanted to do was shoot? Yeah, because, like, for a lot of these guys, your clearest path to remaining in the league is to score, right? And you know, that's the risk that you run there if you do indeed trade for a third star. And now look, maybe, like, there are examples of the third star thing working, right? The Warriors are kind of the best example of it ever working, but I think that was, you know, in that case, you had three homegrown stars and then a jump in the salary cap that allowed you to bring in Kevin Durant. And yeah, that turns out that'll work out, right? But that isn't going to be the scenario here, right? Like, if you bring in a third star, it's going to cost you a big chunk of your rotation. And again, like, none of the three stars that the Lakers would be employing next year are homegrown talent. You didn't draft LeBron James. You didn't draft Anthony Davis. And, you know, yeah, technically you didn't draft Austin Reeves there, right? But he would probably be in that trade. And whoever you acquire, you obviously wouldn't have drafted either. So, like, the only ways that I start to see those three-star models work is if at least two of them are, like, two legit stars are homegrown. And in the Warriors' case, they had three of them, right? You had Steph, and you had Klay, who is one of the best 3-and-D players of all time. And you had Draymond, who was a revolutionary defensive player. All right, if that's your starting point, you probably are going to make it work no matter what. But that wasn't going out and acquiring at three different times via trade or free agency or whatever a supermax contract that really limits what you're going to be able to do elsewhere on your roster. And like, the other thing too is the Lakers, like, if you are going to employ like if you're the Thunder, right? If you're the Thunder and you have so many first rounders, you know, from now till the cows come home, you'll be able to do the three-star model because you can continue to basically bolster that rotation through first round draft talent as those three stars get more and more and more expensive. And it also helps that, like, you know, right now, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to be one of your three stars. He's homegrown and you have full bird rights on him. Jalen Williams, probably going to be one of those other stars there, also homegrown, full bird rights there. And you know, as those guys grow together organically, like this is not ideal for the player, right, necessarily. But when you have stars that grow together and there's kind of a built-in kind of, what's the term that I'm thinking of? Like order of operations, essentially, just like a ready-made culture for what type of opportunities guys are going to get. Those limited opportunities that are maintained with that culture are going to limit what those players are able to do and what type of achievements they're going to be able to make. And so you aren't going to have three super max contracts on your books, right? Just like we saw with the Phoenix Suns, you had three super max contracts or close to super max contracts. You can't do anything else on your roster there. Like you can't. But if you draft enough talent and they become stars, then yeah, that generally tends to work out in your favor, not just because those guys are talented basketball players and all that stuff, and they grew up together, and there's that built-in culture just that you get by playing together, but also because of the feeding order there, like you know, you're going to have one super max player. You might have another max player who maybe makes an all-star game or something like that. But it's really rare that you're going to have multiple all NBA players early in their careers who then, you know, demand that supermax contract and just completely eat up your books. And so like that is, I know it's a long-winded way of saying all of this stuff, but you know, the Lakers we probably know how this is going to go. We know what they're going to pursue right when the offseason starts. And it's going to be back channeling and trying to figure out what they can do to get a third star into the building. And I just don't know, man. That's not how I see the sport. That's not how I view the best way to you know, build out a team. And maybe I'm wrong. I would love to be wrong. If they go out and they trade for Donovan Mitchell, they trade for Trae Young, and it really, really works, and the Lakers, you know, race through the league and win a championship, I will happily sit on here and eat this hat. Maybe. I don't know. It looks like it would cause acid reflux. But like I would happily eat crow and say that I was wrong about everything that I felt about team building in the modern NBA. But we also have too much sample size at this point that like indicates that is a very, very difficult way to build out a team that just completely shrinks your margin for error if none of those three guys are willing to do any of the small ones.